If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Hey, Case, I feel like on this episode of our TFL Talking Trucks podcast, you and I are going to be doing some arguing.
Oh, really? You think it's going to get contentious?
It might. Okay.
Do you have some hot takes or something?
Well, maybe lukewarm takes.
Some of my takes are pretty reasonable.
Well, sometimes you have a hot take, too. No, but we're talking about off-road pickups, really. Yeah. Because you and I, so you recently did a humongous trip in Utah with Tommy.
True.
We recently had several really capable off-roaders in our test fleet.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to talk a little bit more about what makes a pickup truck great at off-roading. And also, maybe that takes away from on-roading.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Often does. I think it's an important thing to talk about, and it is something that we spend a lot of time on because we're based here in the mountains. Moab, Utah is right in our backyard. We even have a company-owned place out there that we stay at because we're in Moab so often.
Yeah.
So it's something that we get to explore and test a lot in a lot of different vehicles. Many of the things that make off-road trucks really good are pretty intuitive, but there's a few things we could talk about as well that you might not necessarily think about that we've found to be helpful or not so helpful over the years in testing a lot of different trucks.
Yeah, and mainly what kind of brought up this topic more to the forefront recently is that we have, for several weeks actually, we have an INEOS Grenadier Quartermaster, which is really one of those pickup trucks which is brand new,
yeah.
But it has some of those traditional elements to it where it just combines a lot of kind of old school tech, actually not so much tech, but just hardware that it brings to the table.
Well, and to your earlier point of trucks having some off-road features that can detract from their on-road drivability, I think the INEOS is a good example of that because it is an enthusiast vehicle through and through. And because of that, it makes some compromises to be, to your point, old school in ways that don't make it the best driving vehicle on road, which we can talk about.
Yeah, and I recently have a lot of experience now with this because several days ago, I went to the INEOS Grenadier gathering in Moab, Utah. So I took a Quartermaster, which is a pickup truck, which they're now selling. I drove it about 360 miles from here in Boulder to Moab, Utah.
Yeah.
I off-roaded it extensively because we were on the trail for about 8 to 9 hours.
And it's pretty cool to be there in Moab with, what, almost 200 INEOS vehicles at that gathering.
So awesome.
Because these are vehicles that you see so rarely out on the road. Here, in Colorado, because we're in a more rugged area, I see them every now and then.
But they're not very common still.
No, it's infrequent. Yeah. So pretty neat to see a lot of Ineos Grenadiers in the same place.
And our producer Cole is showing us some clips. If you're watching us on TFL Talk channel, I met up with our friend Jay Couch. He's now building, well, he's got some parts that he's working on for Ineos and Grenadiers and Quartermasters. And he brought his portal axled truck to Moab.
Well, and the way that we know Jay Couch is because he's a big Unimog guy.
Yes.
So generally, his two primary areas have been, first and foremost, building some insane $500,000-plus Unimog campers, even racing Unimogs, all kind of crazy stuff. He also has a lot of 6x6, 8x8, and even 10x10 military off-road vehicles, which are pretty cool. But he's also a big G-Wagon guy. And I think that this Ineos appealed to him in a special kind of way. But of course, if Jay Couch is going to do anything with an Ineos, it's going to be over the top because that's how he operates.
Exactly. So, and just really quick before we look at Jay's truck as well, Ineos Grenadier, and I want to hit these points, the chassis is a ladder frame, right? So it's a body-on-frame vehicle. It's got solid axles front and rear. It also has lock-in differentials front and rear, which are optional, actually. But you could equip it from the factory.
Yeah.
So it already has the good bones, right, for making just an amazing off-roader.
So the question is, do you want to start out in the podcast by talking about some of the items in general that make for good off-road trucks, or do you want to dive deep into your experience and time spent with the Grenadier?
Well, let's go to Moab and the Grenadier first, cool, and then hit some of the generics. The reason why I brought up axles and kind of the chassis components is because I think that's what appealed to Jay, right?
Yeah.
And appeals to many other enthusiasts, because if you go back and look at what he did, he basically, G-Wagon Squared, right, has its own portal axles. But according to Jay, and I was talking to him about it, those offer about 6, maybe 6.5 inches of lift, because that's kind of the size of that portal on each side of the axle, which is, think of it just basically gears that are attached to the hub at the hub level. Not so much, you know, the axle is left alone and the suspension is left mostly alone.
Yeah, which is nice for a couple of reasons, because with these Ineos vehicles in particular, if you try to lift them very heavily, much beyond 1.5 or 2 inches, the pinion angle on the drive shaft gets pretty crazy. It builds up a lot of heat and the vehicle is just not happy.
It could just destroy itself after that.
So on these Grenadiers, you can't really do a massive suspension lift.
Which is weird, actually.
Yeah, it's a bummer because typically solid axle vehicles, one of
are
the perks,
easy to lift. Yeah.
That's one of the perks usually versus independent front suspension, is that it's a little easier to get away with the geometry of lifting them more heavily, but not so much the case with these Grenadiers. Now, the other cool thing about portal axles is you get a lot of ground clearance and a lot of extra ground clearance versus doing a suspension lift, because your axle moves that further from the ground. Mm-hmm. So if you do a typical suspension lift, the only way your axle is getting higher up off the ground and offering you more clearance is by running a bigger tire.
Which the lift allows for.
Which yes, the lift allows
exactly.
for.
Exactly, but you need the bigger tires.
But if you do portals, the lift is basically taking your axle and the body and underside of the vehicle up with it, everything all at once.
And you could put tiny tires on it still and still have a lift.
Yeah, so basically. It's a cool way to do it. Portals are very expensive and they do require maintenance because they have gear oil in them. So it's not for everyone. It's not for me because, again, I'm priced out of. I think my entire 4x4 maybe costs less than a set of portal axles. So really expensive.
It can be very expensive. So, Cole, we're also live on patreon.com/TFLcar. Thank you for your support. I think we also have a comment I noticed from, I think it's from Elliot Tucker Dixon. Thank you, Elliot. He says sometimes we make him laugh out loud.
Nice. Well, that's good.
I'm glad.
Yeah. Yeah. if anything.
Sorry, now I'm laughing out loud. So, If you go back to the portal axles, when we're looking underneath this truck, Cole, right there.
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons why they're expensive, well, first of all, it's kind of low volume production, right?
For sure, yeah. There's not hundreds of thousands of people buying portals.
Exactly. So that already makes it expensive because it's kind of more a custom-made unit. But also, it just has to be, I don't know, built in a very stout manner, right? Because there's a lot of engineering that goes into it because it's kind of hanging on the outside. So it takes a lot of forces through it as well.
Yeah, a lot of machine work, a lot of really nice materials, engineering that goes into them. So they are expensive things to build. I think, you know,
so
I bet my second gen RAM is less expensive than the average portal.
Yeah, because I think they run, and I'm not going to get this right because I think you and I looked at this like a year ago, and back then, I think a portal, a single axle was like $20,000. So
it's an expensive lift.
So I don't know, it's maybe even more now. But what I appreciate about what Jay is doing is because he's also based in Colorado here near Denver. So, and he manufactures a lot of stuff in-house.
Which is really
cool.
So
this is a made in the USA type deal.
And to be fair, people who are buying Grenadiers have some money.
Well, yeah, they're already paying $70,000, $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 for some of these vehicles.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah. So I think it was really cool to see
Jay's truck
because it's, okay, because also the look, I'm all over the place today, because the look of the truck is also like matters a lot to me, right?
Yeah.
When you look at the stock vehicle, it's good, but the smaller tires on the stock vehicle make it a little bit out of proportion to me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's interesting. I think that the INEOS design philosophy and layout is a lot like what you see with old school Land Rovers, which is intentional. And you look back at photos from Camel Trophy back in the day and some Land Rovers that did some really incredible things in those competitions and difficult tasks off-road. They were never running really huge tires.
Because back then, people had skill.
Sure, yeah. They also had a heavy foot.
Yes.
You know, carry some momentum and a lot of articulation. The interesting thing, actually, about a stock Grenadier, whether it's the SUV that they call the wagon or the pickup truck version of it, the Quartermaster, like what you brought out to Moab, is that even though they don't look like they have a whole lot of clearance, they
do, actually.
They do, and they end up doing pretty well, all things considered. It doesn't look like it's sitting up that high. But Jay's on portal axles is obviously sitting up very high. He's also got a custom fabricated bed on the back of his, cool little light.
And also customized front bumper as well. Yeah,
bumper, a light bar mount. So Jay's truck looks impeccable.
He calls it the Smurf.
I got to imagine that there's, probably $250,000 wrapped up in his truck.
We didn't talk about dollars.
That would be my guess. there's a lot of work put into
it. Because I think this, the Grenadier that he brought on 37s, so those portals allowed them to put a 37-inch tall tire pretty easily. Also, much wider tire as well without rubbing. This is kind of his test bed, right? So it's not really like, hey, Jay, you know, how much is this going to cost? Because he's kind of testing things out.
For sure.
Getting it fitted. And his goal, I think, is to, you know, having some of the stuff for sale so other people can enjoy this as well.
Yeah.
But it was just, I wanted to bring it here because it just kind of takes it to 11.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because ground clearance is insane. So if the stock Grenadier has, about 10 inches of ground clearance? Jay told me his portals are offering about 4.5 inches of lift.
Yeah.
So you're already going, without even changing the tires, you're already going to about 14.5 inches of ground clearance.
And then you go to 37s.
Yes. So that adds another 2 or 3 inches of sidewall. I mean, overall tire difference. So I felt like I could lay down on the ground and he could drive over me without much problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I could probably sit crisscross.
Applesauce?
Yeah. And have it drive over. Maybe not quite that much, but it's an impressive looking machine. There is a German company called Litec. LaTeX?
I think so, yes.
Don't necessarily know the exact correct way to say it, but they also had a portal kit that was fitted to a lot of INEOS Grenadiers. And it looked neat, but it also looked pretty top-heavy. I would say that J Couches seems maybe a little more stable, wide. It doesn't look quite as narrow and
tall. Because so it seems
like a really good kit.
You and I saw those other portals on the Grenadier, I think at the Overland Expo, right? And I think I also saw it at the New York Auto Show last year as well. I agree with you. And when Jay told me my portal axles, he was talking about the ones he designed, are a little bit lower than the others, I couldn't believe my ears. Because Jay always goes bigger.
He's pretty extreme.
And huger.
Yeah.
And when he said, I'm a little bit lower, I was like, what? But I think he's thinking about the whole package, right? You don't want to be too high and too tippy, right? And then that makes for a bad off-roader.
Yeah, because that's the G-Wagon problem a lot of times, especially older solid axle G-Wagons. They're very, very narrow track width vehicles. If I remember correctly, and if you don't believe me, feel free to Google this, but I'm pretty sure the track width of a Ford Focus is wider than the old G-Wagon, the old solid axle G-Wagons before they updated them in 2018. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what year they
approximately, they went
to the independent front suspension. They made it wider in the current generation,
yeah.
But those old G-Wagons are very narrow. People lift them. People do portals on those G-Wagons, and they are very capable in a lot of ways, but they are tall and skinny. So
exactly.
They get tippy.
And also, we can talk about width a little bit later, because when you have a super wide truck like an F-150 Raptor, you have trouble fitting into some trails.
There's a sweet spot.
Yeah, so having a narrower vehicle is also very helpful. We have Jonathan here also in the chat room, so thank you for joining us. He's saying, glad you guys were able to get a Grenadier for testing. One of the most interesting vehicles on sale right now. See, a lot of people are very big fans of the Grenadier.
Yeah, when they know what it is, which obviously most of the
people... Yeah, some people don't.
Most of the people listening to this podcast will know what a Grenadier is because they're fans of trucks and pay attention to the industry. But out and about on a day-to-day basis, it's always surprising to me how many people that are interested enough in vehicles to pay attention and actually ask the question, hey, what is that? There's a lot of people that have no idea, have never seen one before. And
it's
a head turner. Even in stock form, the one that we're testing,
When
you drive it around, people look at it a little confused.
Yeah, and also I noticed, well, sometimes people in other pickup trucks check out other guys' trucks, right? So that's normal. But I've noticed...
A little truck envy.
But I've noticed people in like, I don't know, Subarus are taking notice. I mean, across the board, like no matter what they're driving... They're taking notice of the INEOS Grenadier. So that's quite interesting. And like Jonathan is saying, yes, we'll have more videos. So you did Cliffhanger 2.0 with a Gladiator versus Quartermaster. I did more videos from Moab, so that's coming up very soon.
A BetterHelp ad. Therapy isn't just for times of major challenge. It's a valuable tool for anyone wanting to improve their well-being. It can help you develop healthy coping skills, set boundaries, and support personal growth. BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with a fully licensed therapist right from your phone. No commuting, no waiting rooms. And you can switch therapists at any time. Sign up at BetterHelp.com and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com.
So would you agree, well, I think this is where the argument starts. Would you say that a great off-road truck should have front solid axle or not? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so when we typically talk about off-roading, we are talking about rock crawling because we live in the Rocky Mountains.
Yes.
And rocky is an accurate description.
That's so in the name.
It's in the name for a good reason.
Yes.
That's the kind of off-roading that we have around us. But of course, there's different kinds of off-roading. There's mud, there's sand, you know, you can go hit the dunes. I think that like the majority of Raptor trucks, for example, those are more high-speed off-roaders. So you're talking whoops, you're talking desert running.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, it's generally rock crawling. And traditionally speaking, solid axle configuration is a great setup for rock crawling. especially because they articulate really well. It's not to say that you can't design an independent front suspension that articulates really well. There's a lot of very, very capable rock buggies, some crazy machines that run IFS, and they do a fantastic job of articulating well.
And also a lot of side-by-sides, for example, have independent suspensions.
I mean, the full-size Ford Bronco, independent front suspension with a sway bar disconnect, and you get fantastic amount of articulation from that, maybe not quite as much as the solid axle with a sway bar disconnect
or
Wrangler. But a lot. So it's pros and cons. I think for most people, it's a big trade-off and not necessarily worth it. You could still absolutely have a great rock crawling truck with independent front suspension. I think a good example of that is the Colorado ZR2 and the Canyon AT4X, because those trucks have independent front suspension, like all of the GM trucks, but they're great rock crawlers because they're very tall and they have front and rear lockers. So you get great clearance from the factory and you get all the traction that you need. So even without the most amount of articulation of any truck on the market, they do a great job. So it's maybe not a total deal breaker to be rock crawling. Well, it's definitely not a total deal breaker to be rock crawling with independent front suspension, but it is cool to see a truck on the market with a live front axle, with a solid front axle, because at this point there is the Grenadier and the Jeep Gladiator.
Yes.
There's the heavy duty Ram and the heavy duty Ford.
That's about it.
Yeah. And across the market, of course, with the Grenadier and the Jeep, there are the SUV versions of those.
But the G-Wagon is no more.
Yeah, the G-Wagon is no more.
IFS, it went to independent front suspension.
Here in the States, neither Toyota nor Land Rover at this point have anything with a solid front axle.
Exactly.
There's off the top of my head, those are the only four vehicles, platforms, whatever, technically six vehicles, because there's the SUV versions, the two trucks, four trucks total. Those are the only things I could think of that you could buy right now brand new in the States with a solid front axle.
So here's my hot take, or maybe it's not so hot, but my hot take is that you don't really need solid front axle to be a great off-road truck.
Yeah,
I think you might be agreeing with that, kind of.
For sure.
But I've spoken to many, many a fella where where they said they would never consider, like in the heavy-duty space, they would never consider a GM HD truck.
Because of the independent front suspension.
Sure. And they always say, the Ford Super Duty and the Ram heavy-duty trucks they just enjoy those too, because a lot of owners who own those trucks like bigger tires, and they put sometimes lift kits on those trucks as well.
And like we said, typically easier to lift a vehicle on solid axles.
Yeah, typically speaking. So, but I'm in the other camp, and I think you're in the same camp where you can have a good all-around truck that can do some rock crawling and can do some desert running and can do many other things. And also be a daily driver. I think that's the most important thing, right? Because you and I love off-roading. We have a job that allows us to do some serious off-roading. But most people, and you and I, spend most time on the road.
Yeah, everybody does, inevitably. The majority of miles that you do is on the road. I actually have a counterpoint to the daily driving solid axles thing.
Okay, but you own one, actually.
Two of the three vehicles I actually own have solid front axles. So the majority of the vehicles that I actually
Tell me more.
With my own money, have solid front axles. I love solid front axles. It's how I learned how to drive on an old CJ2A back when I was 9 years old. I've spent a lot of time in vehicles with solid front ends. And I think the nice thing about it for me, the reason that I gravitate towards them, is because if I'm shopping around for a truck or an SUV, I kind of want that vehicle to have the driving characteristics and personality of a truck or an SUV. Now, it's really impressive the drivability that you could get out of a vehicle that's still very rugged with an independent front suspension, good combination. I think, without giving them too much praise and lighting the comments on fire, Land Rover does a great job or has in the past, of making some vehicles that have cross-linked air suspension, fully independent, that still articulates really well, gives you a bunch of clearance, and drives great on road. So you can kind of have your cake and eat it too. It's possible to engineer a setup like that. But I love getting in a vehicle that has solid axles because I want to jump behind the wheel of that machine and drive it around and feel like, yeah, this is a rugged 4x4 or this is a big truck. And that's how it drives. That's the personality that it has. No shade to the Honda Ridgeline. The Honda Ridgeline is what I think a lot of engineers are targeting for NVH, noise, vibration, and harshness, yeah. that kind of experience. Because the Ridgeline drives a lot like a CRV.
A crossover, yeah.
Or, you know, a Honda Pilot. It doesn't drive like how you think a truck, traditionally speaking, would drive. And that makes a lot of people gravitate towards it. But when I'm shopping around for a truck, I want it to feel like a truck. And a solid axle definitely does that. So it doesn't bother me at all when I'm daily driving them, even though you are literally sacrificing comfort.
I own something with a solid front axle as well.
Buhanka.
My Buhanka Soviet van does have solid in front and rear axles. We have a little model of one here on our desk as we're talking. So I've been wrestling with this, right? I drove about 800 miles total, maybe more, combining, you know, commuting and the Grenadier. And I see what you're saying, right? I think there is a way to make a truck with a front solid axle be refined. When I drive a Super Duty, and let's say like an F-250. And we're not talking about like chassis cabs that beat you up because they have really stiff springs, right? And they're meant for something else. But like an F-250 or so, it feels trucky and feels big and strong.
Yeah.
But it also feels like I can go 1,000 miles in one, like from here to Phoenix, without a lot of fatigue, you know, without feeling like I need to saw at the wheel a little bit or, you know. However, when you lift those guys, there is also something called def wobble, where, right? So that can come up if you improperly lift something or do something too much. Yeah, neglected maintenance. So
steering components. So,
but when I was driving the Grenadier, I felt like I was a little bit more fatigued than I otherwise would be.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? And I think also in the other chat room, and we'll get to some of these comments as well, Cole. But in the other chat room, we had Chris Park mention something about the Grenadier because his friend recently purchased one. And he says that after a few days later, they returned it to the dealership because of the steering.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about the steering.
Yeah, it's definitely not for everyone. You know, the whole solid axle experience. I think ultimately you have to be not just an enthusiast in general, but an enthusiast of a certain kind to actually feel like the trade-off of a solid front axle is worthwhile. But there is also a spectrum of refinement in solid axle vehicles, right? Because I think a lot of people will lack the nuance when they talk about, oh, well, you know, Jeeps are so sketchy to drive. You know, I drove one on the highway once and it was horrible. It's like, yeah, well, I'm pretty sure the Jeep that you drove on the highway once was a lifted YJ Wrangler that had never seen a pair of ball joints or tie rod ends, you know, since it was brand new on the factory line. So what the solid axle was then versus a brand new JL Wrangler, they're very different. And I actually think that the Gladiator and the Wrangler have better steering with their solid front axle than the Ineos does. And even with the updates that Ineos has made to the steering.
Which we know they did, yeah.
Yeah, which they did do. Yeah. I think the Jeeps actually steer better.
Well, so the Ineos has this thing, and Cole, we can also go to the other chat room. The Ineos steering, Grenadier steering, doesn't really return on center after you complete a turn.
Yeah, let's it feels like the caster is maybe not quite there.
Yeah, and I think that was on purpose. I mean, really, It was a little bit more maybe for direct feedback when you're off-roading.
Yeah,
right?
and the steering on the INEOS works great off-road.
Yeah, because I off-roaded it for 9 hours. And I actually felt really good after that. So that's the trade-off. You know, spending 9 hours off-road over rough terrain and rocky terrain in Moab versus spending 6 hours on-road, you know, I felt really much better after I off-roaded it versus some other trucks that we've had versus spending 6 hours on the highway. You see what I'm saying? It is
for
a real trade-off.
Yeah.
But so let's say you take that out of the question. Let's say you take the self-centering thing out. But the other thing I don't get about the Grenadier system, it's also not doesn't have a lot of angle. So it doesn't actually have a the turning radius is pretty bad, actually.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
I think that's one of the things that they've worked on and have.
And they tried to help it.
Improved. It's also a lot of turns lock to lock.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. So you're shuffling the wheel around a bunch. So again, the INEOS is an enthusiast vehicle, and enthusiast vehicles are always compromised. Think about something like a Porsche 911. If you tried to convince, you know, your wife or somebody that this was a smart buy, they would say, well, you know, it's got a tiny trunk in the back seat, so you can't really use them. And right? Yeah. That's because it's an enthusiast vehicle and it's compromised to be a sports car. It's kind of the same thing, but in the opposite direction with a vehicle like the INEOS. It's got solid front axles. It's got the option of these lockers. It's body on frame. It's very traditional in all of those ways, which is going to have an impact on the way that it drives and the way it operates.
Yeah, so those are the things you really have to consider when purchasing, you know, a truck for off-roading. I wanted to address some of the comments from Ben Torex, who is here as well. Thank you, Ben, for joining us. He's got a couple things here. He's like, he also enjoys the podcast. He suggests that I should join Car-ish podcast with you guys and call it Truck-ish.
Truck-ish, yeah.
We could have a little bit more Truck-ish.
Yeah, little guest star.
If Tommy and Jenna are okay with it, of course.
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
Yes.
If Cole's okay with it behind
the camera.
If
our producer Cole is okay with it, maybe we could try it.
If he does a shoot.
And also
down.
Ben has a question, which is quite interesting. He says, my son-in-law wants to delete his 2025 GMC 3-liter Duramax turbo diesel. He's convinced it won't void his warranty. How do I talk him out of it?
I would probably have him call his dealership because I don't know. I don't own anything nearly
that new,
so I don't work with dealerships a lot. But I got to imagine that would have an impact.
Okay, so I think Ben's son-in-law, first of all, he's probably enjoying his 3-liter because a lot of people who purchase those engines because they're very efficient.
Yeah, we love the 3-liter Duramax.
And quite
great
torquey. But he's probably, I don't know, either wants more power or maybe more sound out of it or maybe all of the above. I don't know what he's looking for. But
yeah.
But so first of all, okay. So if you remove deleting means removing emissions equipment. So basically mm-hmm. almost like straight piping it, maybe putting a muffler, yeah. but removing the DPF,
EGR
the
delete.
DEF, EGR delete maybe. Well, EGR delete, so all those things, you're actually changing the way it came from the factory. So, and this is a newer truck. So as such, first of all, it almost surely will void warranty. Whether it's a legal problem or not, it's a different topic because, you know, the regulations are kind of in flux right now with different enforcement. But the way I would, Ben, I would approach it also is if your son-in-law wants to resell this truck ever again, let's say 2, 3, 4 years down the road, I think it might pose an issue because the next customer will see some of the mods.
Mm-hmm.
And say, why was it modded? How was it modded? Why is it deleted? And it will just lose value. I mean, that truck may not be
for
as valuable.
Sure. And especially geographically, there's a lot of areas where, you know, as much as legislation is changing, for example, if you lived where our office is here in Boulder, Colorado.
There's regulations are pretty strict.
Yeah, you still have to test for emissions. So it would pretty massively narrow the scope of people that would actually be able to buy that truck.
If you live in Wyoming, for example, the regulations may be different, and that could be a different story. So it's just...
The other thing Ben was mentioning, which is a good point, is that the Roxor does have a solid front axle. That's true. That is something that you could buy brand new with a solid axle in addition to the vehicles that we were talking about, though they're not street legal.
Exactly. Yes, very true. And also, we had the Roxor recently, thanks to Roxor. We had one on loan. And I found it really refreshing and kind of honest, except it didn't have locking differentials. And I think that kind of slowed it down.
Yeah, that and like the old school flat fender Jeeps that it's kind of based on, didn't have a ton of articulation either. Which, again, is common with those as well.
Yeah, Grenadier doesn't suffer from lack of articulation.
No, maybe Grenadier does pretty well.
Yeah, the Roxor struggled a little bit with that. And I think the Roxor was also, it's trying to combine payload capability, the wheelbase that it has, with stiffer springs, because it has a lot of payload. And when you put a stiffer spring on, there'll be a little bit less flex in that
It's spring. Not a high-speed off-road vehicle.
No.
It's not a high-speed anything.
It's not a high-speeder. So I don't know. I think, remember 2 years ago, you and I and Roman and I think Tommy, we voted for the Ford Ranger Raptor as truck of the year.
Yep. Yeah, and I stand by that.
And it has independent front suspension. And I think that still shows that you could build a pickup without a solid front axle and still create a very desirable, capable vehicle.
I actually agree with you, even though I am...
What?
Personally, crazy, right? I am very passionate about solid axles myself. It's the thing that I like to buy and drive. But I agree. It's not a deal breaker as far as an off-road truck.
Okay. So now Lloyd is here. Thank you, Lloyd. So I met Lloyd Schwartz in Moab just at this gathering. Lloyd, it was very nice to meet you. Lloyd says this. Ineos is certainly a niche vehicle. The trade-off is unrivaled off-road capability and most durable off-road vehicle mass-produced today. So I think Lloyd is hitting on a great point, and I want to keep hitting this point because it's on my list here. We have a list. Because if you look underneath the Ineos, and Jay Couch had the same opinion, is that the components are gigantic. The frame is big. The tie rod ends are big, the axles are big, and that means there's a lot of metal there. And it's also not very light.
Yeah.
I think I calculated that it was about 6,200 pounds.
Yeah, that's what my second gen Cummins weighs.
See? So beefy components.
Yeah.
What else is Lloyd saying? With less luxury and less... Well, but... See, the Ineos is also pretty luxurious. You know, it has very nice seats. Did you enjoy those Recaros that it has?
You know, I don't know if I would describe it as luxurious. I think it's got some luxurious features. I think the transparent panels in the roof that you could pop open, that's really cool. I think it's luxurious in that it is, like some of our comments are saying here, it is very unique. It's a little niche. It's not something that you see on the road all the time. Which that in itself holds a lot of value for a lot of people. So in a way, it is a luxury item, but not necessarily a luxury vehicle in the traditional sense because ultimately the interior and materials are not over the top. It's a pretty plasticky interior. I think it's a cool design.
Yeah, but I agree. I think what I was... Where I was going also is that when I look at just coming up to the Grenadier, right? Just looking at it, it just looks premium. It's hard to explain. And I'm not talking about the price. Like, let's say I could forget that it costs $100,000.
Yeah.
Let's say I could. When I come up to it, just the way the panels are fitting together and the way that the door feels, you know, and the way that... Just it appears, it feels like a special vehicle.
Yeah, and I think that's the best way to describe it. It does feel special. It feels a lot more special. We test a lot of trucks. We test plenty of trucks that are more expensive, SUVs that are more expensive than the Ineos.
Yeah.
But whenever we have an Ineos here, it feels a lot more special than most vehicles.
And it's hard to put your finger on it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I think it's partly because they are exotic, right? Because it's a new company.
Yeah.
And it's not a vehicle you see on the road a whole lot. And it's not something that's been around for a long time. So it's a little out there and different, exotic in that sense. And I think that it has some of the same charisma and curb appeal that G-Wagons bring to the table. Because if you think of a G-Wagon sitting there at a stoplight, it has a certain presence to it. And the Ineos is similar in that sense. It's just this big, boxy, kind of no-nonsense, this serious-looking, rugged SUV. Not that the majority of G-Wagons are rugged, but they do have that kind of presence to them. So, I agree. I think it's a luxury product.
Yeah, even though the interior could be a little bit plasticky, I agree. But also the floors are plastic. Well, they have like a plastic type of covering. But there's drain holes as well.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, functionality of the Ineos.
There's no such thing as water damage. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, you could see kind of some interior shots of this Quartermaster right now where Jen and I were taking it for a test drive. I met many awesome people at the gathering, at the Grenadier gathering. Lloyd was, of course, one of them. I also met Merv, who was an owner participating in the event. And Merv told me that he's retired now, but he used to be a helicopter pilot with the military, with the U.S. Army. And he appreciated the switches. It kind of reminded him a little bit more aviation related, all the switch gear inside of the Ineos. And I want to hit more about maybe visibility and also durability, right? Because if you look underneath some of the modern independent front suspension vehicles and you look at those thin little parts, you know, the Hummer H2 was guilty of this too. Mm-hmm. Remember how it was?
Was that a steering component? What was it that failed on?
Steering links, yeah.
Yeah.
Remember, I even upgraded ours.
Yeah.
Remember, we went to Cognito, I think, was the aftermarket company, and we got some beefier components for it because some of those components are just thin, and unless you actually use it, which is using it off-road, sometimes they just fail.
And that's one of the cool things about the Ineos, because you may look at the, at times, you know, eye-watering prices attached to them and wonder why, because, you know, it maybe doesn't have all of the technology and comfort features that other similarly priced vehicles have. But when you understand the way that that vehicle was designed and developed, to your point, to be very durable and actually engineered to go off-road long distances and hold up to that kind of punishment, then you start to understand better why that vehicle costs what it does.
Yeah, and also the Grenadier Quartermaster is built at the factory in France. So it has a lot going against it with chicken tax and other tariffs.
On the truck specifically.
On the truck specifically, yeah. Because of all the taxes that it has to deal with. So that's working against it. I think in the chat room in the Patreon, we also had Adam Strom. So I wanted to thank Adam for joining us as well. Lloyd says the Grenadier doesn't have any massaging seats. So hence...
Yeah, it depends on the road surface you're driving over. You might get a massage of
sorts.
A little bit of a good massage. Kind of like an 80s massaging bed that just shakes you around, right?
Exactly. But you know what? When I aired down, we did 7 Mile and Backwards Bill trails.
Yeah.
When I was there in Moab, near Moab. And airing down to about, I went to about 26 PSI because I didn't want to go too low. I don't know, just the thing that I do. It was really comfy, actually. It was pretty nice. And I was, like I said, I want to point that out. I was impressed after 8 or 9 hours off-road. I was still, it didn't beat me up. I mean, the Grenadier was quite good.
Well, and Tommy and I, we took that Grenadier and a Jeep Gladiator up Cliffhanger 2.0, which isn't a trail that we've been using as often recently. And it is a very difficult trail. We broke...
Because of this, if you're watching it on video, sorry to interrupt you, it's got loose rocks.
Yeah, very loose.
Yeah, so they move every time you drive over them.
The trail changes with every run. It's soft, silty dirt and rocks that, yeah, to your point, go tumbling down the hill every time you try to drive up it. So the trail's never really quite the same two times. And we actually broke, was it a front drive shaft a long time ago on a Ram Rebel? On the stretcher trail?
A slightly lifted Ram Rebel. I want to point that out. It wasn't a stock truck. So it probably was a little bit stressed because we lifted it and put bigger tires on it, but we did break a Rebel.
It's a good shot of me walking with a camera.
It was beautiful.
In this video. But the Ineos and the Jeep both did a great job getting up this very challenging stretch of trail, challenging as far as traction is concerned, especially because this Grenadier has lockers. I'm always a little surprised to see, because I look around at these Ineoses on the used market. There's really a lot of them that people bought and
without lockers.
Didn't option the lockers on.
Yeah.
I'm not so surprised that a lot of people don't option the winch, because a winch from the factory on these is pretty expensive.
I think it's like $3,500 or something.
Yeah. But man, I just can't. Personally, I can't imagine ordering one of these and not getting the lockers. It's not to say that you couldn't do a lot of fun trails with them, but this is a vehicle that goes so far in its hardware to the extreme of being a rugged off-road machine that I just think equipping it with lockers makes a lot of sense. And it really does add a lot of capability.
Yeah, and I was talking also, I met Michael at the gathering. I was talking to Michael about the new electric pickup trucks as well. Because remember, years back when we first heard about the Rivian R1T and the R1S and the four motors, the quad motor system, I thought it was the end game.
Yeah.
I thought having a motor for each wheel
was
going to be perfect. It was going to be amazing traction, slow, fast, it doesn't matter. And then we ran into some problems testing some of these vehicles.
Yeah, so it seems like on the software side of things, whenever you have an e-locker where basically the software is trying to send power to the wheels that still have traction, there can be a little bit of confusion there. So it doesn't always seem to be programmed perfectly. And that's an issue that can be overcome and something that actually Rivian did work on.
And also Rivian since then came out with a two motor system. And also they helped the quad motor. They reprogrammed that software.
Made it better.
And then they made the two dual motor Rivian trucks also fairly capable. So they've been improving this.
But I think
over time.
One of the interesting things about electric trucks like that, quad motor setups that you would think would have the potential to send power exactly where it needs to go and be even better off-road than the traditional old-school lockers system that you kind of use. The other thing that I think is a limiting factor with them is that those electric motors, obviously they produce a boatload of torque, right? What's the Rivian rated at, like 900?
I don't know, but like I mean, remember the Hummer rated theirs at 12,000 pound-feet of torque because they use multiplication for gear ratios.
Yeah.
So,
and when measuring torque in an EV is a little wonky, because when you put a vehicle on a dyno, it's a little counterintuitive. But on a dyno, the dyno actually measures horsepower, it measures the work being done, but it calculates torque based on RPM.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where things get wonky.
But RPM means different things than electric motors.
Yeah, so that's why sometimes you look at an e-bike that has a chain that's about, you know, an eighth of an inch thick, and they say it's got 800 foot-pounds of torque.
Wowza.
It's just like, well, I don't know if that's strictly true.
Okay.
But as much torque as EVs do have...
Huge amounts.
They don't have the advantage of the multiplication of gearing that you get in a combustion vehicle with not only several gears in its transmission, but a low range transfer case.
And the axle as well, too.
That is a huge multiplication of the amount of torque available. So when you get an EV truck that's a quad motor and it's teetering on two wheels on an obstacle, well, you've cut the power in half there because you're only using maybe two of the four electric motors it has. There's also only so much power that can flow to those electric motors.
Yeah, when they're moving slowly. Yes, exactly.
Without burning things out.
Yeah.
And you essentially have the same gearing, if you want to call it that you would have on the highway. So you don't have this this multiplication of the gearing that you get in a combustion vehicle. So torque, as much torque as electric vehicles have, it can actually be kind of a problem off-road. They don't always have quite enough to get those heavy, heavy EVs up a big rock feature.
So when we are talking about moving slowly over difficult obstacles like that, potentially, you know, rocks, we usually talk about rock crawling. I think a solid axled vehicle with triple lockers is still superior.
Yeah, low range.
Locking differentials.
And locking differentials can't be beat.
Physically locking.
One interesting thing, though, it's kind of equipped on the wrong vehicle because there's not really an off-road package of it, but the electric G-Wagon, the G580 with EQ technology.
Yes.
Has low range gearing.
What?
So it's a quad motor vehicle, one electric motor for each wheel, and each one of those wheels has its own low range gear set, which is really cool.
And almost like a portal, because a portal has its own gearing.
Yeah, there's gearing in a portal.
Yeah.
And we did actually test the G580 with EQ technology.
Wait a minute. Where was I? Where I wasn't here.
No, you weren't. You should have been. It was cool.
Oh,
we did the tank turn with it in the dirt, but we also went up the trenches and put it in low range, and it did a really good job. It's just limited on tires and clearance because it's a G-Wagon.
Yeah, the tires weren't very aggressive.
No, it had like autocross tires.
Yeah, what is up with that?
Yeah, they were like race car tires.
Oh, man, I missed this? Oh, no.
Ridiculous.
I wanted to be there.
But we put it on the slip test. It did fantastic. It did really well in the trenches. It is a capable vehicle in its four-wheel drive system.
It's got like slicks. Look at that. It's got slicks for like racing.
It looks so out of place on the dirt because of the wheel tire package, because of the clearance. But the four-wheel drive system they engineered into this electric G-Wagon's really good. So
wow. So I'm hoping, here's my hope, because I know this G-Wagon is probably approaching $200,000 new.
Yeah.
Right? I'm hoping there'll be these G-Wagons on the used market. Oh, I see you doing the tank turn too.
Woo.
Oh, you know what I'm saying? Fun. A couple of years down the road, maybe you could pick one up for, I don't know, under 100K, I'm hoping. I mean, hopefully.
Who knows? Because G-Wagons don't depreciate that fast.
No, they don't.
Electric Mercedes depreciate extremely fast. Maybe this will be somewhere in between.
The G-Wagon will take some of this thing out of the depreciation.
Probably.
Of an electric Mercedes.
Because ultimately, even though the sales on the electric G-Wagons aren't huge, I think people would still like to have a G-Wagon of some sort. And I don't think these are ever going to be $15,000 cars.
So I want to hit, I think we hit durability. We hit a lot of subjects here.
Yeah, like you said, we've been all over the place, man.
But what about visibility?
It just doesn't exist in modern cars.
Well, so here's a couple things. I appreciate, and I was also struggling with this when I first got into the Grenadier. I think Grenadier, as far as looking at the terrain around you, has good visibility. The windshield itself is kind of short, right? So like, let's say you come up to a traffic light, it's too close. Sometimes it's hard to look up through the windshield, at least for me, and kind of see even with a glass panel on the roof. But if you're looking down, it seems like the window is low enough where you could see towards the side of your vehicle. And also, it has no gauges in front of you. You know, it has that little panel for lights. Well, fortunately or unfortunately, it's also a trade-off, right? Because there is no binnacle there to prevent you, you know, from looking over your front fenders. And also, the hood is angled, right? On the Grenadier, the hood comes to a point, kind of, and the fenders are lower.
Yeah.
So you could see a little bit better towards the front of it.
Yeah, the Ineos, certainly in this day and age, far from the worst offender. Same thing with Jeeps. Jeeps kind of have the narrow hood and separate fender flares.
Yes, yes.
And they are sort of narrow vehicles in general. And the visibility from them, also pretty decent, although like with the Ineos, it's a pretty short windshield. But vast majority of vehicles on sale now, impossible to see out of.
And then there's cameras. So they add cameras to solve those
issues. Yeah, which is kind of a Band-Aid solution for it. And the funny thing is, like, for example, we went on the launch of the current generation of Ram heavy-duty trucks.
Mm-hmm.
And from Rebel to at the time, there wasn't the diesel Power Wagon, but even, you know, regular Power Wagon or the Rebel, whatever, they all have a performance kind of appearance hood that has a basically a fake
scoop.
It's kind of more of a hood bulge, I guess, than
it's a bulge really a which is not functional and it takes away visibility.
Yeah, so on the off-road trims of the truck, your visibility is actually worse and it's really bad. I mean, you can maybe see something. Oh, I don't know.
Well,
there would be a way to put a real number on it, and it would depend a little bit on your height and seating position, but it's maybe 10 feet or more in front of you that you can't see past. So I hope you have a good memory of what you were driving toward on the trail, because it's going to be a while before your wheels actually roll over it.
Exactly, which is sometimes an issue for at least me when we're filming off-road, because we're also talking to the camera. And if I take my eyes off the trail and I speak to the camera for just a few seconds, I already forgot what I was about to drive over,
So,
which is an issue.
Well, on some hills, depending on how the angle of the hill changes, you might be sitting in one of those trucks. It's not even that steep of a hill, and all you see is basically...
just sky.
Yeah, the skyline like that.
The sky of the mountain, but you're not seeing the trail, really.
Yeah, so you just have to hope that everything in front of you
is okay,
is short enough to be driven over. Because the camera systems, even though they can be helpful, they kind of flatten things out.
Yeah.
It's hard to get a real feel for it. So, visibility in a lot of modern cars, not really a thing.
But it's important, especially for off-roading. And it also, is. I mean, in the city, I mean, if you're having, you know, a tight parking situation, it's very helpful.
Yeah.
Of course, if
there's a small car parked in front of you and maybe you've got no idea because it's completely obscured by your hood.
So I took as part of the Grenadier gathering, by the way, it's kind of a, you know, Grenadier invited us there as well. So the manufacturing support was there. And so it's kind of, but it has its own, I mean, it's got its own set of people who are running it and helping with it. And Lloyd was there. He was also leading some trails, right? So there's a variety of different sponsors also for that event. And I did some off-road training. So basically off-road recovery, I should say. Not off-road driving, but off-road recovery training. And we used the winch on the Grenadier, which is there. I mean, it's...
Did you run out of line?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Several times.
It's short. It's like 50?
It's 50 feet.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's one point. It's not very long. So you could bring your own extension case.
Ooh, true.
Extension line.
Yep.
And also snatch blocks. You can do multiplication. You can do a lot of geometry, a lot of fun things. But when you pull the line almost closer to the end, it's got a red marker on the line, which kind of says there's about a meter or 3 feet left inside the winch. And if you lift it up just a hair, like let's say it's not perfectly horizontal, but the driver can actually see that red marker. Like you could be sitting behind the steering wheel, which means you have good visibility.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that was cool to see. That wouldn't be the case with the big hoods. Even like the Chevy Colorado, the Ford Ranger has kind of a large hood, but I think the Colorado has a very large hood in front of it. So a lot of these new vehicles. Even in midsize segment have fairly large hoods.
And the bigger the truck, the worse the visibility is.
Because it's sitting taller and taller and taller.
Yeah, and they just, styling-wise, bigger grills, taller hoods. Now, we've talked about, because we mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, we were going to talk about some of the features that make for good off-road vehicles in general. We've talked about quite a few of those in our discussion of the INEOS already. So we kind of talked a little bit about axle configurations. We talked about lockers, talked about visibility. But there's a few more things that we can mention. So one of them is angles, approach, breakover, departure, which is a big deal. So in general, my go-to category of pickup truck, if I'm going to be picking out of anything to take off-road, is going to be a midsize. Because weight is also a big factor.
Okay.
The heavier the truck, the more it's going to struggle under certain circumstances. Like Cliffhanger, for example, it's such a soft dirt hill that in a really heavy truck, you start to dig and sink down. So lightness is nice. That's one of the reasons that I like midsizers, also because they're narrow. And when you're narrow, you get more line choice. So there's a lot of places you could go in bigger trucks, HD trucks, something like a Power Wagon. But it's more challenging in a lot of ways. And as far as angles are concerned on midsize trucks, both the Grenadier and the Gladiator have pretty long wheelbases.
Mm-hmm.
They're on the larger side of midsizers.
Well, the Gladiator is definitely guilty of this.
Yeah.
I think it's like 135 inches, which is humongous for a midsize truck.
Yeah, and the Grenadier is a big one too.
Yeah. For a Grenadier, I would put it on slightly bigger tires.
Yeah.
Which will improve the breakover angle specifically.
Yeah, and it's one of the nice things with those trucks or any of these trucks is they could be modified. You can improve the angles. But as far as a factory option for a pickup truck with some really great angles, my personal pick is probably going to be Colorado ZR2 or Canyon 84X, because as much as we love the Ranger Raptor, because I think that's a more fun truck than the Colorado and Canyon because of that powertrain, the Ranger Raptor sits very low compared to an 84X or a Colorado ZR2. And especially if you get like a ZR2 Bison or a Canyon 84X AEV, oh my God, that truck on 35s, it's on stilts.
Yes, it's hard to jump into, actually.
Yeah, it is. It's a difficult truck to get into because it sits up so high. So those are very expensive trucks.
Yeah.
But if you're willing to spend the money from the factory, you can get a truck with a boatload of clearance. But like we were saying, too, any one of these trucks you could modify and you could lift them. But man.
I think, so here's the thing about the Quartermaster that we took off-road. The approach angle is plenty. I think it's over 36 degrees. And I felt really confident approaching some of those ledges. And I knew I would not hit my bumper. I don't want to damage any vehicle, especially a vehicle that doesn't belong to me, right? This was on loan. But then my departure angle is also pretty good. It's like 25 degrees, but it's long. Still, the tail is very long on the truck. So I was dragging my hitch. I did not take off my hitch. And the receiver, I'm talking about the receiver, sticks out a little bit of the truck. Not the actual ball, but the receiver sticks out. So I hit that several times. Actually, more than several times. And also the bumper corners in the back I was hitting.
Yeah.
But it's not very visible, right? Because it's underneath. So I felt okay. I did put a couple scratches. Sorry, Ineos. I think it's a matter of like just comfort, right? When you don't have enough breakover angle or approach or departure, you're either constantly hitting or you're damaging stuff. And that does not make for a good day, right? So when you are in that Colorado ZR2 Bison, like we've been, right?
Yeah.
You're just not touching any obstacles as
yeah,
you're off-roading.
Because they're on stilts.
Because they're on stilts.
It's but incredible.
But it makes you feel like you're Jay Couch on portals.
Yeah. So when it comes to angles and also weight and again narrowness, a lot of these things that make vehicles not only better off-road but more fun in a lot of ways, I really do think that even just a standard Colorado ZR2 or Canyon 84X, but especially the kitted out versions of them, are from the factory some of the best trucks that you could get as far as clearance and angles.
Yeah.
Tommy and I went out to Moab and met our buddy Ryan from Driving Sports TV
right
there.
Right.
He's got a Tacoma that he lifted. He did some modifications to it. It's a really nice truck. But he's also based in the Pacific Northwest. I think it was kind of configured for that setup. And we dragged him out to Moab where it was all rock crawling. And the Tacoma was hitting the rocks quite a bit. Whereas the Canyon 84X we have,
all stock,
which is not an AEV edition, it's just a regular 84X.
Oh, there's the video, yes.
Our Canyon really touched down very little. We did top of the world trail.
World, yeah.
which for a lot of bone stock
which
vehicles...
Which is not easy.
Yeah, for a lot of bone stock vehicles on some of the harder lines, it's not necessarily a good idea. But man, the Canyon is just such an awesome little rock crawler. And look, kind of to our earlier point, this is a vehicle with independent front suspension. Not the most articulation of any truck on the market, but it's got a lot of clearance, and it's got the front and rear lockers, so it did awesome.
Yeah, and that's kind of where my mind was going, right? Thinking about this truck and also the Ranger Raptor to some extent. I mean, Tacoma is also good. I mean, but the thing about Tacoma, you cannot get it on 35s like you could with a Bison, for example.
Yeah, and it's...
Stock, I mean.
It's one of the off-road mid-sizers, I guess one of the few that you can't get with a front locker. Because the Grenadier, you can. The Jeep, you can. The Canyon in Colorado, you can. The Ranger, you can.
Toyota, where are you?
So it's what, Frontier and Tacoma?
Mm-hmm. And the Honda.
And even the Trail Sport.
Even the Trail Sport Ridgeline does not have a front locker.
Or a rear.
Or a rear locker. or any solid axles, for that matter.
Yeah. Those are all factors.
Good points. Elliot is here, too, in the comments. Thank you, Elliot, for commenting with us on Patreon. Case, can you help me decode his message?
Which one?
I was looking at his comment. Did it go away? Okay. Sorry.
Never mind.
Thank you, Elliot. I was having trouble decoding his comment. Good comments. So the trail I was on Backward Bill, there was an area called the Toaster. Basically two rocks that are very close to each other.
So you're like a slice of bread going through?
Yeah, so you're like a slice of bread getting into this Toaster. And the Grenadier, it's not a super wide truck. By design, I had maybe 2 inches on each side. I mean, it was a very tight squeeze. So I was thinking to myself, if I was in a Bronco Raptor, I would not be able to actually finish this trail.
No, you'd have to drive over both of the
probably
rocks.
Probably drive over them, which were big boulders. So yeah, definitely. Yep. When you're thinking about an off-roader, you would think midsize. I think that's what you were thinking probably.
For sure. Yeah, and again, there's a use case for every different scenario because Justin King that we know, for example,
yeah.
He has a Power Wagon that he off-roads a lot, and he uses it as a recovery vehicle specifically because it's big and heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's an anchor.
Exactly. A substantial vehicle like that for recoveries is actually really useful. So there is a time and place for a vehicle that's wide. Maybe you're doing some high speed, some desert running like what a Bronco Raptor set up for. But again, a lot of the stuff around us, man, narrow is a big advantage.
Lots of trees here as well.
Yep.
And also, Justin King owns a Bronco for the other reasons, right? Because it's a smaller vehicle, narrower, and better clearances to some degree. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Grenadier as well. Because you're jumping in the truck, it does not have a push-button start.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, and I think it comes back to kind of simplicity, durability. If you're in the middle of the Serengeti and, let's say, the button fails, you push-start, if you can't put a key into the slot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't know if it's the main thing I would worry about failing on a vehicle in the Serengeti. But... yeah, well, I don't think that the lack of it's a little strange vehicle at that price point. What was the sticker on that Grenadier?
$101,000.
Yeah, so it's a lot of money, and I don't think that the lack of a push button start is the end of the world. It's a little strange in a modern vehicle, especially one that costs that amount. But at this point, actually putting a key into the steering column and turning it to start a vehicle. It's almost a little bit of a novelty, so it might be as much of an upside as a downside for most people, especially the kinds of eccentric maybe people that are shopping around for a Grenadier anyway.
Yeah, so the Grenadier is a very interesting vehicle because it's got these quirks.
Yeah.
A lot of quirks. Some of them are really awesome. Like we talked about the premium appearance of it and very attractive. But also these quirks. But I think, I don't know, what I love about the Grenadier also, for example, in the interior, it has visible bolts that you can remove.
Exposed hardware, yeah.
Exposed hardware. You can remove each component. You could look behind it. You could open the panel down by your right knee, and there's the fuse box there.
Yeah.
And it's really easy to reach. So it has a lot of those types of things. But there is also stock, nowhere to put your iPhone. Like, you know, you could put it, I guess you could hide it in the center console somewhere, but in order to have it visible somewhere for mapping or something like that, it does have Apple CarPlay,
yeah,
which is nice. But I kind of like to mount my phone somewhere in the vehicle, so it's kind of handy.
Yeah, it is. It's an interesting combination of things because you've got solid axles, this body on frame. You know, it's got a more traditional kind of lever to stick it into low range. So in a lot of way, and the way that you actually insert the key and everything, in a lot of ways it is very old school. But then at the same time, you have some of the overseas, the European regulations, safety regulations. So some of the things that it chimes at you for.
And also every time you shut it off and turn it back on, it resets to like almost base level. So if you were in an off-road mode or not.
So there's a lot of little warnings and messages that pop up about this and that safety system and pay attention, don't be distracted. And the fact that all of essentially your information is in that center screen because you've got that group of dummy lights directly in front of you, but it doesn't have the old school analog gauges. So it's, yeah, it's a little, it's kind of a weird combination of the two things because a lot of things about it are very old school, and then there are some kind of what I would describe as frustratingly new school things about it, where I kind of wish it had some old school analog gauges, and definitely wish that it didn't chime at you all the time about this and that safety feature.
Agreed.
So,
I think Elliot also made a comment that he would want Chase as a special guest. Is he talking about Chase, our detail specialist?
I don't know. Could be. Or, yeah, I've also been called Chase many a time.
Some people confuse Case and Chase.
Yeah, it's pretty close.
It's all good.
I mean, he was saying nice things about Chase, so
okay.
If that means me, but I don't know.
We don't know. Yeah. Thank you, Elliot.
We have a detail guy named Chase.
Yes.
So I'm not the only person with a name that sounds similar to that.
So I think, dude, we're kind of at the end of this episode. I really appreciate some of the digital screens on the Grenadier, like inclinometer, compass, altitude, elevation meter, temperature gauges.
I appreciate a lot of the physical buttons.
Lots of physical buttons.
For lockers and otherwise.
Yes, and auxiliary switches up above that you could add lights to or winches and anything.
I will say, though, not all locker engagement is made equal. Because the Ineos, the engagement and disengagement on the lockers is...
can be finicky.
Yeah, maybe a little finicky, especially compared to, I think, Ford on the Bronco and Jeep on the Wrangler, the Gladiator. Theirs work immediately.
And Grenadier works a little bit like Tacoma, I would say.
Yeah. Toyota can also be a little tough with getting in a low range and also engaging lockers.
And disengaging such features. So, and I think a lot of it maybe is based on, you know, the size of those components, because usually Toyota and maybe even Grenadier, maybe they use larger, you know, thicker chains or different gears, and some of those mesh, you know, the way they mesh together is a little bit different.
I think maybe that's a charitable way to look at it.
I'm trying to look at the positive side, I guess.
Yeah, but it's very diplomatic.
But you know the best feature about an off-road pickup truck, the one single one, is that it's doesn't cost a lot of money.
And which truck is that?
A used one, probably.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, one that's like 30 or 40 years old. Okay.
No,
yeah.
because I'm being a little bit, you know, I'm joking, but I'm not joking. Because the best truck is the one you don't feel bad if you are scratching it.
Yeah.
Right? 100%. If your truck is less than $100,000, less than $10,000 or less than $20,000, you don't feel bad when you're scratching it.
No, it's true. The less you care about a vehicle in some ways, the more fun you have off-roading it and the more things you can do with it. I mean, you could probably get a Mustang up Hell's Gate if you were willing to send it up there at 70 miles an hour. So,
yeah, you could.
There is something to that.
So,
sure.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, the more affordable something is, the better. But we're testing a lot of brand new vehicles, and we will be doing more of this.
Yeah.
Next week, I'm traveling to Detroit to see something there. Stay tuned. What else do we have going on? I mean, we have a lot. I mean, Roman is out on events. Tommy is currently out. He's going towards
Mudfest.
Mudfest. So he's going to have some off-roading for us to look at.
Yeah, and if you're interested in this kind of podcast format, diving deep into the subject of off-road vehicles and everything really that has to do with off-roading, that's something that Tommy and I have been doing sporadically. So we love podcasting about off-road subjects because a lot of the podcasts that are out there about off-roading are about some pretty...
Oh, did I infringe on that?
No, not at all. I don't think anyone's offended.
I think Cole is.
A lot of the podcasts about off-roading are about some crazy tube chassis, rock buggies and things.
We
wanted to do one a little bit where we talk about some vehicles you could walk into a dealership and buy and still have maybe as a daily driver. So, yeah, it's definitely something that we'll be doing more of.
So you have some of that going on at TFL Talk channel and, of course, our podcasting, anywhere podcasts are available. So, and Cole works really hard, you know, on our Spotify outlet, you know, Apple Podcast, all that stuff.
Thanks, Cole.
Cole works really hard.
Thumbs up.
Behind the scenes. Thankless. Really thankless.
Thankless work.
Yes.
Especially
But we're thanking him now.
Yeah, true.
All right. Thanks for joining us. Hopefully this was fun. I mean, I really enjoyed the Moab. You also had a rugged adventure there with Onyx Off-Road.
Yeah, that's true. If you want to see a really neat video, because some of Andre's haven't come out yet, then you could check out the rugged adventure that Tommy and I did. It's on the Off-Road channel. The whole video is like an hour long, but...
But it's enjoyable. I watched it.
Yeah, we put a lot of effort into it. It's a pretty cool video.
It was Land Rover versus Land Cruiser.
Yeah, and everyone that's watched it, I think, has enjoyed it. Every single person. So
we checked.
Check it out. Yep.
Yeah. All right. So thanks once again, and we'll see you next week.